Good evening, everyone. Well, more people than I thought would fit in here. Okay, for now we have Mimoja. She will talk about everything and the kitchen sink and what to find in firmware images. These are her findings from 1 year of research. She had the idea last year at GPN. And now let's hear what she has to say.
Hey, thank you all for coming. It's awesome to be speaking in front of such a large crowd. So let's talk about firmware. Small disclaimer, my knowledge is from reverse engineering. I do not work somewhere where I build firmware every day, so please take it with a bit of salt. I want to teach you some knowledge which you could use if you would look at a hex dump of a firmware image. So not going too deep, too deep into the actual logic of a firmware, more about the headers, the structures, and the data you can find in there. As stated, last year on Saturday, I crashed IFD tool, and instead of fixing my bug, I started a rewrite in Go. And from there, I did parse quite some data structures you usually find in images. This is going to be dense. I'm sorry. I have almost 70 slides for the upcoming 60 minutes, and they contain code. The slides are published, of course, so you can look them up if you want to build parse or whatever by yourself. So the first thing you might want to know about firmware is, where does my CPU start executing? When you boot your firmware, this is, for example, the end of a firmware image. The only interesting thing is in the last line you see here, because your CPU jumps to minus 16, and it is in 16-bit mode. So we are only looking at this instruction you see there in the second line. And as we are in 16-bit mode, the last two bytes are discarded. They are not part of the actual instruction. It's a short jump backwards in this particular case. So it will jump backwards into the image, which is mapped to the end of the of the RAM, and will load all the UEFI specifics from there. So we can't talk about firmware without talking about UEFI. If you want to know something about UEFI, the UEFI in your image you're looking at, there is an awesome tool which has an awesome graphical user interface. It's the UEFI tool. It's a Qt tool. You can use it, and it will give you a nice overview of the things that are in there. You can click around and get a tree view. If you are more barebone on your way, you can use Google Fiano, which is part of the Linux Boot project, which gives you a Go wrapper around all the UEFI data structures. Or, if you listen to me now, let's parse them by ourselves. What exactly is UEFI? UEFI is an image, or a UEFI region is a file system. It's separated into three structures. Those are volumes, regions, and files. Volumes and regions are specified. Files can contain some free-flowing information, and the header of a UEFI structure, a volume, a region, or a file, contains an identical GUID with the respected information on what we are looking at. So if we take a look at our volume header, we see, okay, we have 16 bytes of zero, then we have our volume GUID, we have our firmware length, and we have a signature. We have some attributes, header lengths, checksums, and so on, things that are nice to know, but you usually don't need so much. So we can take a look at this. We can see this. You can usually see your 16 zeros by eye. What you else want to take a look at is the underscore FVH signature. That's the EFI object signature. And if you are looking at the volume, then your last two entries in the header, the block map and the entry map. The block map is an array of run length encoded entries, and is terminated by an entry of 0 and 0. And your map entry gives you an overview about the number of blocks and the length of the blocks. So you can now know, okay, my volume contains this amount of blocks after the header, and how big is each block, so you can extract your information from a volume. But you can read volumes, you can read regions in the same way, but what does it give of an advantage? Well, if your CPU does this backward jumps, it starts in the SEC stage of UEFI, where the RAM in it and CPU in it are done, and some very basic devices are initialized. From there, it will continue in the PEI stage, where the pre-EFI and the platform initialization will take place, and then it will prepare for the DXI phase, which is the driver stage of UEFI, which mounts drives, does UEFI runtimes and interfaces, prepares those to be able to communicate with the operating system later on. It does interface configuration, for example, determines where you want to boot from, and then it loads your operating system. But we all know somehow how we deal with UEFI. The thing we are not used to see are updates. So if our vendor gives us updates, what are the formats UEFI specified to us to use? Well, those are in update capsules. Those are capsules, or those volumes have special GUIDs, which determine the type of update capsule. This is just an example of those I found and the most common ones. And let's take a look at two of those, because they are quite complex. The EFI file system structure after the GUID contains a header size, the same flags we saw with the volume, the capsule image size, and the sequence number, because those capsules can be sequenced and partitioned into several parts, and you've got your instance ID, the number in this sequence. And then you've got a lot of offsets for parsing it if you want to, and you can take whatever you need, the split information where it was split, but those are bit fields, and I will not talk about them now. The most common one I saw when I looked at images was the EFI2 file system capsule, and it was quite nice because you've got your header size, you've got your flags, you've got the size of your image, which is to be copied perfectly bit for bit into your flash chip on your mainboard, the image offset, and some OEM offset where the OEM can configure stuff. So if you have this type of capsule, you can just look at it, find your offset, and go to the offset, extract your flash image from there. Quite nice. So what does it look in Hexamp? If we take a look at this, we have our 16 bytes of zero at the beginning, then we have our EFI2 GUID, we have our encoded size. We know, okay, this is 432 bit coming from here, and then you have your offset. So yeah, that's directly followed by the actual data. That's something you can see by the eye if you know what you're looking at. So we talked about CPUs and how CPUs are initialized, and I think most of you know, before you get the control over this flow of your CPU, Intel and your vendor have already started like five other CPUs and five other code paths. So let's talk about the Intel specifics you can find in a modern firmware image. An Intel image is partitioned into the Intel Flash Descriptor, the IFD, the BIOS region, the Management Engine region, Gigabit Ethernet, and platform data. Sometimes in even newer images, you will also find embedded controller images. The IFD is the big Intel header in your flash image. It's located at the beginning of the flash image, either at 0 or at 0x10. It contains about information about the segments and of the flash image. It contains information about the configuration you want to run this image in and all the other stuff the CPU needs to know. Your tools of choice, if you don't want to parse it yourself, is IFD tool. You will find it in the core boot tree. Address bits that are found in these headers are to be shifted forward to the left, so all your addresses have to be aligned. The IFD itself starts with the 5A, A5, FOF, FOOF signature. And let's take a look at the IFD header that follows after the signature. It's mainly built from four interesting values and an ME value. So we first have our signature, then come four mappings we can use. Those are bit fields, then some OEM reserved areas where all the rest of the data usually is stored, not all the time, but most of the time. And then we have some ME configuration map, which does not necessarily have to be there. The first map, the chip and region config, FL map 0. We have 8 bits of component base address. And if we take out these 8 bits and shift them to the left, we get our configurations for the different chips that this image could be burned onto. At this offset, we will find an array of objects contained of this structure. So we have 32 bits of FL comp, 32 bits of FLIL comp, and some other data. So let's just take those apart shortly. The FL comp gives basic information about what you can do with this chip. It's does this chip allow dual output fast read support, or can it read or write certain instructions? And also the identity, the density of the actual components. So if you have a computer with more than one flash chip, this would be your place where you could find your component density. The FLIL structure contains 4 illegal instructions. I have basically no clue what they're doing, but they are printed all the time if someone takes apart the IFD header. So maybe someone of you knows. I would be lucky to know it. The rest of the bits from the original FL map 0 are the number of flash chips, 6 reserved bits, the region base address, which is where we can find our region configurations, which are 7 to 9 entries in an array, which you can shift to the left and skip the end, or shift to the right, get the start address of your region. You have a number of regions field in 3 bits encoded, which is the only way to determine the flash descriptor version before you before Coffee Lake, and some reserved bits. The second FL map, so the second 32-bit after your IFD signature, is the SPI and PCH, so the chipset configuration. It has the master base address in the first 8 bits, where all the region access rights are stored, and the number of masters. So let's take a look at those sections here. This basically determines, as a bit field, what the access rights to your flash are. So is your main operating system, for example, allowed to read or write the flash descriptor, allowed to read or write the BIOS region, ME region, and so on. This is stored several times for the several requests that could be sent to the system. And we have some more reserved 6 bits after the FL map 1. The PCH strap base, where the PCH straps are stored, and the number of PCH straps are stored here. And we have the FL map 2 entry, which links to the CPU straps. So same thing, 8 bits of CPU strap space and the number of CPU straps. And the new thing since Coffee Lake, the FL map 3. This is where we can now read the descriptor version, so we do no longer have to guess how many regions our image will contain. And this undocumented or not so good documented ME configuration, this contains ME VSCC, so ME power configuration and ME general configuration addresses to be used by the ME. Talking of the ME, how is the ME image stored? We can now read it from our flash because we know the region limits, and it is organized into partitions. And of course, as everything with Intel, it starts with a header. We have 16 bytes of reserved space. Most of the times they are zero. Then we have our $FPT signature, then the number of entries, a version, a type, a length, checksums, and so on, general data. And following that, we have our partition informations with the number of entries in it. A partition header has a name, it has an owner, it has an offset and a length, and some other configuration stuff you usually don't need if you just want to read it from a firmware image. If you now have a partition can contain containers, a container can contain modules. So the containers you want to take a look at, those starting with the MCP name, those are usually configuration containers. $MRM, MAN, and $MN2 modules contain compressed code, usually Huffman encoded, so this is something that is too complex, I think, for 1 hour. I will skip it here. Another thing you will encounter when talking about Intel images and Intel blobs and things we don't trust is the FSP. It's the Intel firmware support package. It's an Intel-specific binary blob that's used to start the platform, for example, do RAM in it, and you start initializing things like cache as RAM and so on. It's distributed as most of the times 3 UEFI volumes, and they are easy recognizable because the first file in the first volume has a very specific GUID you don't see in other files. Okay, we talked about Intel. So on the AMD side, what's there? Well, AMD doesn't directly have a IFD at the beginning of the image, but they have something similar. It's the firmware entry table. The PSP, the security processor of the AMD CPUs, will look for this and will initialize the CPU accordingly. And it will look at the 0x20,000 offset in the flash image. For example, if you have a 16 megabyte image, all addresses will have a mapping of 0xFF. This depends on your image because your image is mapped to the end of the flash, and based on your length, all offsets will shift. So your PSP will find this firmware entry table at this offset. You first have your signature, then you have an ICM ROM base, a GEC ROM base, which is Gigabit Ethernet. You have XHCI, which is USB, the PSP, where the PSP firmware lies, a new PSP firmware, and some other configurations. So let's start at the top. Signature, similar to Intel, but not the same. It's 55AA55AA. That's kind of easy to find. You just look at your image, and if it has this signature at this specific offset, you are quite sure you have a modern AMD image in front of you. So what do we find at the ICM ROM base? What's there if we take a look at this offset? We find another magic, the AMD IMC-C magic. So what is an IMC? IMC is AMD's embedded controller implementation. It's rarely used, but almost all CPUs have it. Some newer CPUs seem to ditch it. So if you have it, okay, you can just take a look at it. It's barely documented, but the Core Boot Wiki is your way to start here. The next thing, Gigabit Ethernet. Yeah, okay, we all know what that is. It's hardware specific. Let's not take a look at that because we don't want to take a look at bytecode right now. XHCI. So there are two versions of XHCI firmware I found when taking a look at some images. Both run on V800 chipsets from Renesas. And the Core Boot Wiki documented the old structure, at least. If we take a look here, according to the Core Boot Wiki, the XHCI offset, if you take a look there, you find a signature, you find an offset to your firmware. And from there, you can find another header, which gives you the firmware version and then the firmware data. Okay, two indirections, but you can find your firmware if you want to take a look at that. The new XHCI firmware starts with this, and I have only found this one version. There might be others, but I haven't seen those in the wild. And if you take a look at this, there is a big block of zeros to the right. What might that be? Let's put it into our disassembler and realize, yeah, those are jumps, what we are looking here. It's a reset vector. This is the firmware. It starts with the firmware, and there's no header around that. So we have our entry vector. If you want to take a look at this, maybe in a recently released reverse engineering tool, go for it. It's kind of easy to do. But how are those things propagated to us users? Because Intel has this FSP, which is lying in a GitHub repository as binary blobs. Well, AMD has this AGESA thing. Binary blobs are shipped, to my understanding, as an AGESA bundle you only get with an NDA. The format in which this bundle is distributed is known. There is a specification, and AGESA is quite a short name for a long word. It's an interface, and they have it forever. I don't have it. I don't know how it looks like, but we can take a look at the version of our AGESA. In Jara syntax, there are several markers we can look at in our image if we want to take knowledge about our AGESA. There are always this AMD something something or the AGESA strings in there. So just a small sample of things we are looking at. Those are several versions for several PIs, several CPU iterations AMD distributes the AGESA for. They have changed the formats quite sometimes, and usually having a higher AGESA version doesn't mean it's newer, because when they release a new CPU, and often the AGESA is backwards compatible, the version number will start with 0.something again, or 1.something, based on where you are in the release cycle. But not only the PSP, not only the actual boot code is contained in the AGESA, but also the PSP firmware I already talked about. The PSP, as stated, is AMD security coprocessor, and it boots in front of the main system unless you have a really old system, and it's required to boot unless you have a really old system, and it only runs signed code unless you have an exploit. Quite a nice thing. I kindly asked, and the author of PSP tool released his tool to take a look, like the UEFI tool, into PSP firmware. He released it 2 or 3 days ago. Awesome. Please take a look at it if you are interested. You can find it with a GitHub search just using the search query PSP tool. But if you have a modern system, how does it boot? Well, it's pretty straightforward. It's as you think. The PSP on-chip boot ROM will bootstrap the PSP. The PSP will do the signature verification of your flash image and your PSP firmware. It will read and load its own bootloader, jump in there, and the bootloader will run the PSP operating system. From there, your main CPU operating system will be loaded and your CPU will be started, where your CPU can now take off and load all the UEFI stuff we already talked about. So where does this firmware lie if we take a look at our UEFI code? Well, there you have two paddings. Usually it's stored in the second padding because AMD doesn't distribute it as UEFI volumes. It's just binary with offsets. So you usually find it in your padding. If you want to play around with your firmware image on AMD, don't touch the padding or it will no longer boot. Other things we talked about when you take a look at the firmware entry table. There were the PSP headers, the PSP base addresses. So what do we find if we take a look at those? Well, there are three entries here: the PSP directory base, the new PSP directory base for newer versions of the PSP, and the BDH directory. The BDH directory is very similar to the PSP if you want to parse it with different magic values, so I will ignore it for now. The PSP directory base, if you take a look over at this base address, you will find the PSP cookie. It's either $PSP or 2PSP. And it will be the cookie, a checksum, the number of entries following, and some reserved field for padding. If you are in the situation to find a 2PSP header here, or 2PSP signature, this means the next two addresses you will take a look at aren't entries, but those are additional offsets to where your directories lie, where then hopefully you find your $PSP entries. So how does an entry look that follows this header? It has a type, it has a size, it has a location and a reserved field. Pretty straightforward. The type, it's the type of the entry you're looking at. This table is incredibly long if you take a look at it. I took it from PSP tool. There are over 1,000 entries AMD uses, as far as I know. But if you now have your type, your offset, and you know your numbers, then you can build yourself quite the nice table of your directory and your entries and what you find in there. And usually your PSP image starts with the AMD public key, the AMD bootloader, and a recovery bootloader. So we have a public key and we only want to run signed code. Where does this security come from? Well, the directory starts with the public key, so the bootloader reads the public key, it uses the public key to verify the bootloader and jumps in there, the PSP bootloader, the on-ROM bootloader. But we have a problem. End of 2018, AMD started to encrypt the bootloader. Okay, now we have a new type. It's the encrypted key, which is used to decrypt the bootloader before we jump into that, and it's using AES, and it's, for now, it's looking quite good. So how does this work? Image property of CTS, I took their images. Your on-chip, your PSP on-chip has a key, and it's using the type 0x21 encrypted key to reseed the AES, uses the module key it stores, takes from the inside to decrypt the bootloader and then be able to run it. In an image, the boot ROM on the PSP goes to the encryption key, takes the encryption key to decrypt the bootloader. Okay, but we for now know those were able. AMD was able to do this in a software update. So, if you are able to boot your operating system with an older image, you can still debug your bootloader because this appears to be a logic that was already available but not used before that. And there is a very special type of entries. Those are data entries. Data entries contain 0x100 bytes of undocumented header, which is signed. And, of course, as everything, verified. If we take a look at it, we have our ID, we have a signed size, we have a signature fingerprint, we have a bit to know if it is compressed, and if it is compressed, we get the size further down in the header. We also get to know our version in BCD code, because AMD uses BCD code everywhere. Don't ask me why. And the header is verified, but we had the problem that several images contained entries where the signed size was zero, so the data wasn't verified. This was the Ryzen fall vulnerability we heard maybe last year about. And sprinting through this talk way too fast, I'm coming to my end, talking about what I'm not looking at, microcode. Because microcode doesn't have a header. There is no real magic. OK, there is a header, but there is no magic you can look for. And it is very specific to AMD or Intel. And detecting microcode in your image is quite hard. You can only do stochastics and statistics about the bytes you are looking at and maybe find something that is microcode related. Because the microcode is loaded by your firmware, and it is not at a fixed offset. You know your Linux is able to run microcode updates on your CPU, so you just put it to an address and tell the CPU to go look there. But if you know you're looking at a microcode update, there is an extractor tool, which is by Platimov, the guy who also wrote the excellent ME extractor tool, if you want to take a look at those things. Yeah, and I'm sorry for running through this talk way too fast, but I'm coming to my end. I'm guessing you have a million of questions now.
So first, thank you for your really deep dive into firmwares. And if you have questions, please raise your hands. I will come over to you and hand you the microphone.
For the IFD, you mentioned that the offset is either 0 or 10. Do you have any information on, well, what information this is based on? Or is it, do you have any guesses?
It's mainly about the age of the firmware image. Very old Intel CPUs had it at 0, and at some point it appeared, to my knowledge, at 16 bytes into the image. It was quite some time, so I think somewhere in the core to do times around. I'm not perfectly sure here.
Yeah, so when you say very old, you talk in 2006, 2008?
I'm not quite sure, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, more questions? Okay, I don't see any more questions then. Oh, directly in front of me, sorry.
You mentioned that there in the AMD image there's this public key for that's used to basically verify the firmware contents. So how exactly at boot up is this public key verified then if it's just open in the flash?
The public key is also distributed by AMD freely, and it's verified against the internal fingerprint of the FSP of the PSP. It has an internal fingerprint to check it against. We cannot really exchange it, sorry. Could you use the microphone?
Okay, for someone who draws transistors and doesn't really can't really follow this all in real time, if I want to find the information that you've been talking about somewhere on the web, where would I do that?
I thought about this like 5 minutes before the talk. What do you prefer? I think I would just tweet it and give it shout it out to the internet. If you just Yeah, I have a website, Google Memoja, and I will put it online in like 5 minutes or something like that. That's maybe the easiest version.
Okay, more questions? Otherwise, thank you very much.
So you already did a lot of work even before the release of the PSP extraction tool. How did you analyze the images before? Did you just go through them by hand? And
I kindly asked the person who wrote PSP tool. We talked, we were in conversation, so I had a rough look. Corbett documented like the very basic of the firmware entry table. The first four fields were documented. Other fields we just found by taking a look at, and then it was just parsing, and breaking my own parsers until I had a rough image of what was going on.
So you started with mentioning your IFD tool rewrite. Do you have any plans for contributing your changes back to the core boot project, or maybe even including your rewrite or incorporating the fixes that you wanted to avoid in the first place?
The IFD tool was fixed by ages ago, so it was my stupidity. It wasn't working the way I wanted it. My Go rewrite is online on my GitHub, and IFD tool is actively programmed on, and there are more very good people taking a look at that. I really do not have a lot to offer. My tool does JSON output. That's everything different. So you can take a look. In general, I will try to continue adding the PSP parsing to the Fiano project, the Linux boot Fiano parser, in the next time. Don't know when I have time and motivation.
Yeah, cool. Sounds great. I mean, you gave the talk here, so you already gave quite a few bits back. That's nice. Thanks.
Okay, then, thank you, and have a nice evening. Thank you.